Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my co-anchor, executive producer, and all-around extraordinary leader, Mary Gambat. Mary, how are we doing today?
Doing really great. I always love to just sit here in anticipation with the title that I'm going to have for the day, so I'll take it.
Can you tell that I don't read the intro off a teleprompter and I just make it up?
No, so don't tell anybody the secret.
Yeah, I just did. The other secret is we have two leaders in the not-for-profit sector helping. Well, they actually serve people, consult for people, are trusted advisors for people in the not-for-profit sector. And they are, in fact, Scott Davis, who I've known for several years, a CPA, partner in charge, the not-for-profit services operation over at Pragmatis CPAs, and Lawrence Larry Scott, who is an MBA CPA partner at Pragmatis CPAs. Pragmatis, one of our longtime partners. I've done a whole range of leadership and communication coaching there for several folks. Hey, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be part of this.
Hey, Scott, put this in perspective. We run a we run a separate not-for-profit media production company. And let's just say we're challenged like so many other not-for-profits in so many ways. What is especially challenging when it comes to the financing, the finances, the economics of not-for-profit leadership, and how does Pragmatis help those folks? Scott, go ahead.
No, I think the main concern of most not-for-profits is, you know, fundraising, having enough dollars to get to the program. And, you know, one of the ways to help organizations like that is to get to know them. What are their pain points? What are their, you know, opportunities? And have those discussions with, you know, the C-suite of the nonprofit organization itself.
And Larry, let me ask you this. Why the not-for-profit niche, if you will, at Pragmatis for you? Did you pick it? Did it pick you? How did that happen?
Well, I was in my own firm years ago. I joined Pragmatis a year ago. But about 20 years ago, I decided at that time that I was going to segue totally into the not-for-profit area for a couple of reasons. One, I just liked the industry. I liked working for organizations whose goal is not to make a profit. And I want to state something for everybody listening. The not-for-profit should make a profit. They're just not in business to make a profit. Key difference. And so the owners are not all driven. What's my tax effects? What the bank's going to do? The goal is to do something, some service. And so I found servicing these people and organizations is much more rewarding than individuals, corporations. And although you do make a little less money, but all around it's more enjoyable.
Well said. Scott, let me come back to you. Our not-for-profit, the Caucus Educational Corporation, which has been in collaboration with public media for many years, our partners in public media are challenged on so many levels. We do not, as a not-for-profit, seek any government grant. All of our funding is private foundations, corporations, philanthropic individuals, et cetera. But here's one of the things I've learned about not-for-profit financing, and you can help us, Scott. We are not that good at, I appreciate how Larry said this, we're not there to make a profit, but you need to make a profit. And here's the bottom line. Sometimes I wonder if we're entrepreneurial enough as not-for-profit leaders, as opposed to saying, well, we're doing really good things. Why aren't people financing it? Mary, jump in after this, but go ahead, Scott.
No, I think that's a very valid point. I think it's a challenge for a lot of nonprofit organizations that, you know, the intentions are good when someone starts a nonprofit. They have a goal, they have a mission. And the bottom line is not that, as Larry mentioned. That's not technically what they wanted. They want to help as many people as possible. But there is a point where you have to take that step back and look at the financing and the dollars, and does it make sense, and how can you keep it going? And sometimes even build a cushion to keep it going even longer.
What do you mean, cushion?
Perhaps, you know, an endowment or a board designated endowment of some sort. You know, definitely, you know, invest. I mean, you don't have to spend every dollar for the mission. Get some of it aside, so when that rainy day comes, it's there to help the organization.
Mary, is this resonating at all?
Every single bit of it. I'm just leaning in and listening to, just from the nonprofit perspective and leading our nonprofit, there are so many challenges, but there's also opportunities. And Larry, this one's for you. Having been in this industry for so many decades, and Steve and I were just talking about this earlier, for more than 2-3 decades of being a part of innovation and change, Talk about what impact this innovation of artificial intelligence has had, particularly on the accounting industry, and how you're approaching how you are servicing the nonprofits in your orbit, Larry.
I'm going to say that's a work in progress. The AI is relatively new. I mean, it's moved very, very fast. I've been in the computer area too for years, and things just hit like a tidal wave. So I think it's new. I don't think anybody really knows yet. The accounting side of it, AI might perform a lot of very basic bookkeeping. It might help in the auditing, but I don't think it's filtered down yet, other than maybe some software to help your work papers. But I want to mention something on dovetail on what Scott said and what you seem to be interested in, which is the finance.
Yeah.
Very, very, I'm going to say not very little, but a lot less attention is given to doing the financing, the bookkeeping, the accounting of not-for-profits. After doing this for 35 years, I got to tell you that very little money is put aside to hire a professional or accounting department that handles it. But without that, it's very hard to manage the financing, but it's not going to your program. So people don't donate for accounting or bookkeeping, and therefore there's no money, and they don't put it until there's a problem at the not-for-profit. And like Scott said, there is no cushion. You can't get any financing. The donations are not coming in. The events are not being held. Then you can't figure out, and everybody scrambles around. Some money has to be put aside for the accounting in order for you to know what to do with your budget and going forward.
Scott, as I'm listening to Larry, I'm thinking about this. Think back several years ago in March of 2020 when COVID hit. To what degree do you believe, Scott, from your perspective, COVID and the reality of COVID dramatically impacted the not-for-profit sector, particularly when it comes to financing?
I think it had a significant impact. I think at that time when, there was fear in people, there was fear in the country, and, unknowns as to what was going to happen, you tend to contract. So giving can fall. So your donations, contributions are down. And I think that gave a lot of entities time to really look at that, because if you can't do your programs, which might be out in the public, if it's outward facing, you couldn't meet with people. Hopefully they took that time to look and see. And I think they made, hopefully they realized they needed that cushion or the things that's happening again recently with, the grant issues with some large nonprofits. Same thing. The grant dries up, the funding stops, and you realize there's nothing backing up the organization in it for a long-term solution. So it's definitely a challenge for nonprofit organizations.
Mary, I know you remember back to almost to the day. As soon as the reality of COVID, well, what COVID we thought was gonna, what it was gonna be, one of the first things we did, and it wasn't easy and it didn't make everyone happy, and we understand, but as the leaders of a not-for-profit, Mary and I picked a number and we said we need to reduce our expenses by a certain amount, Mary.
Yeah.
Which meant, I love when people say right-sizing the workforce, which is another way of saying, we let certain people go, and these were good people. But if we hadn't done that, then I would be an irresponsible leader. And further, in the environment we're in right now, we're cutting back and being more efficient. And people are like, why can't we just? It's a long-winded way of getting to this. And I want you to respond, Larry. I've worked with not-for-profit leaders who say, we're just going to keep going with the status quo. And my response is, you can't. My thinking is the status quo is actually moving backwards when it comes to financing the economics of a not-for-profit. Is not the status quo dangerous, Larry?
Absolutely. Status quo is dangerous with anything. And I always think of like a not-for-profit like a small business, even if they're a big
Yes.
not-for-profit. They really have to really operate very leanly all the time. And they can't just say, oh, well, this is what happened last year, we'll do it next year. So here's the problem, though. I'm going to twist what you said a little bit,
Sure.
Steve. A lot of times, the first thing a executive director or president does when they're in trouble is start laying off people and start cutting costs. And I think that might be, not might be, is important and needs to be done. But when you're running into trouble, just cutting expenses, and this is a very important point, just cutting expenses is not the net best way necessarily to go. Because what happens, and I've been involved with a lot of organizations that have done this, they have a leader, they brought in somebody, doesn't really know how to lead. And what they do is, okay, we don't have money, cut, cut, cut. And I say to them, you keep cutting everything, you're cutting yourself right out of business because you don't have the resources to perform your programs and
Right.
your events. So you got to do it smartly, not just cut expenses. Have you followed what I
Surgically?
said?
No. I appreciate what you said. Listen, that doesn't mean everyone. Colin Powell once said to me in an interview 20 years ago, Steve, sometimes leaders piss people off. And I said, well, what does that have to do with leadership? And he said, you have to make tough decisions, and not everyone's going to like them. When you're making them, to me, surgical, empathetic, strategic, not that doesn't mean everyone likes it, but you're not going, hey, let's get rid of that department. No, a scalpel, not a hammer. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox. To Scott and Larry, and also to Glenn and Lori and the leadership team at PragerMatters, you've been nothing but great partners. I look forward to continuing my leadership coaching at PragerMatters and the partnership we've had. Gentlemen, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, Steve. Great to
Steve,
see
and
you.
thank everybody in your whole team.
Yeah, Mary's a leader. We know that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMetis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant. But you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.
He's back by popular demand. We have our good friend Jim Kirkus, who's CEO of Meadowlands Chamber, our longtime media partner. Jim is also, to disclose, a trustee of the Caucus Educational Corporation, our not-for-profit leadership, our not-for-profit media company. I'm sorry, Mary, I'm like all over the place. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, buddy. It's so good to be with you guys. I love doing this interview with you.
Well, we love doing what we do. Hey, give us an update. You started this, I don't know how many years ago, Jim, we started talking about FIFA, the World Cup, and you were saying, yeah, I think we're going to get it. I thought, is Kirkus making stuff up? Is he dreaming this? And now, as we enter, we're doing this program going into October 2025. It's happening, my friend.
Oh, it's happening all right. And we are, you know, I remember when we first started talking about this, we were probably five and a half, almost 6 years out when we were just working with the stadium folks and preparing the bid to just potentially be one of the host cities. And here we are 6 months out of the actual World Cup with eight games and the World Cup final being played in our backyard. It's kind of surreal. It's kind of exciting. It's kind of scary. It's all of the above.
We've asked you this before, but it's more, hopefully it'll be more clear now. But in the end, it'll only be clear when everything's added up. What do you truly believe, realistically, Jim, that the economic impact will be for the region, the state? Talk about it.
So I can't give you a specific number, but I will tell you the economic impact will be remarkable for the state and for the region. And because we have learned how to do big events and we've learned from some of the what I call missed opportunities of the past when we're doing these events, we're better at it. And I think we're going to encapsulate all of those experiences that we've learned from doing things like WrestleMania, international
Super
soccer,
Bowl.
Super Bowl, and now to prepare for these 8 games and just leverage every bit we can.
But as Mary jumps in, the World Cup is internationally a very unique sports entertainment experience, right?
Ridiculously so, because it is the world sport, and the passion that comes with international visitors is not something that I've ever witnessed before. And I got my first taste of that. I shared with this you once before in 1994 when we hosted the World Cup, and I was a member with my business at the time at the Chamber, and we were a part of that. And my first game was Italy Ireland, and I never experienced anything like the passion and excitement. I can think about it and get goosebumps from back in 1994 of how remarkable that was. And for us to have multiple games again this year, and an estimated 3 billion people watching the World Cup final from my backyard, it's remarkable.
Okay, hold on. What was the year again? 90 what?
1994.
Italy and.
Italy, Ireland.
Are you ready? Just one quick one. Did Giorgio Canale play in the game?
He did not.
He didn't. For Italy, he did not.
I don't think so. You're making me
Now I'm going to
dig
research.
back.
Mary, I'm going on AI.
Don't ask
Mary,
me. I was in fourth grade then, gentlemen.
I was in fifth. I'm joking. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to check this out because he got my interest. Go ahead, Mary.
Jim, before we move on from FIFA, for everybody that's watching, it's not just MetLife Stadium, correct? There are going to be games happening everywhere. There are fan fests, there are viewing parties. Talk a little bit just about what we can expect for anybody that's watching this in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut. Really, what can we expect and where can we go? We'll put up the website to learn more.
Well, so where we're going to go really is comes down to what I call local activations, and I'm glad you brought this up, Mary. So there's going to be 10 sites in the entire country in the United States where that are host venues, and we are in the middle of Philadelphia, a host venue, and Boston, a host venue, right? So we got games in Boston, games in the Meadowlands, New York, New Jersey, and games in Philadelphia. But really, what the excitement is all about is local activations, and that's what we're going to do better this time than we've done for any event that took place in the past, including Super Bowl. We are working feverishly with lots of local communities to host ethnic festivals and watch parties and street fairs, so that the local communities can embrace the fact that this once in a lifetime event is taking place in our backyard, and we want
Yep.
everybody to be able to touch and feel it in some way, shape, or form.
Mary, you're on a roll.
Oh, I get it again. I want to pivot completely because I know we have a limited amount of time. Jim, what is the latest with the Meadowlands Convention Center? I know that there's been some studies, there's been some talks about what may be happening with that. Is this something? Where is it? What is it? What can we expect with the Meadowlands Convention Center?
Yeah, we've advanced the idea of the next level of feasibility study. Last time we spoke, we had completed a market analysis and an economic impact, which was very significant. The market analysis said that a convention center at the sports complex replacing the arena would be an amazing venue, would be very popular. We did an economic impact. It said this was pre-pandemic. It was like this was actually in 2022, just at the beginning of the pandemic. That was a $30 billion economic impact if we built that facility on the complex. We just redid the market analysis and the economic impact. And it not only ratified all the premises that went into that successful market analysis and economic impact, but it strengthened it, which basically says it's stronger now of a concept to build that convention center at the sports complex than ever before. And so we were awarded $2 million by the governor's office. And we are in the process of the next level of feasibility. We're doing the siting and some engineering, determining the cost to build it. We hope to have that in the next handful of months completed, and we hope to turn over a report to the next governor of New Jersey that gives them all the compelling reasons why they should advance this project and build this facility. We feel very optimistic that we're going to build something. It's and hopefully it'll be what we've designed.
Well, last question from my perspective. Let me also say that it is a question about the Meadowlands Chamber. leadership development program, right? And Jim knows I'm a student of leadership. And in fact, Mary, just to share this, when Lessons in Leadership 2.0, The Tough Stuff, came out, the first book signing was at the Meadowlands
It was.
Chamber. And it was just a great kickoff to a series of events we had with the book, a book tour. But what I'm curious about, Jim, is this: what is the Meadowlands Chamber Leadership Development Program, and who the heck is being trained to be better leaders?
I want to tell you that you don't know this, but I'm going to share with you today that you're certainly the inspiration for our thinking. Everything that you do about the topic of leadership is just so critically important. And we've decided here at the Meadowlands Chamber, our leadership and our governance have decided that we need to play a role in developing the next generation of leaders. And we need to affect positively the mindset of juniors and seniors in high school and college students before they get out of college. We want to show them the importance of civic leadership. We want to show them the importance of what leadership means, even in their own career paths.
Right.
We want to show them what it means to be part of nonprofit organizations and having leadership there. There's so much that goes on in our national discussion today that if somebody doesn't focus on changing the mindset of these youth, we've decided it's our responsibility to play a role in that. And that's what we're going to do.
Well, two things. Number one, I am here, we are here to do everything we can to be helpful, to contribute to that initiative in any way we can. But the other thing is this: Mary and I have been doing this theme that basically says, when people say, hey, why don't they, who are they? The people in leadership positions, older people, why don't they, the people get paid more, why don't they fix this? That'd be nice.
Right.
I tell you what makes more sense. Ask yourself what you can and will do as a leader. Because the they, in my book, you are they. And if you don't do it, and I'm not saying you can do it alone, and I'm not saying we don't push other people in leadership, powerful, influential positions to do the right thing, which doesn't happen all the time or doesn't happen nearly enough. What are you going to do? And so, Jim, it's my, I'm Mary knows when I get on my soapbox, I'm off my soapbox. We are all, Jim, as all in as partners, my friend.
And listen, you're going to be so critical. I raised your hand before you even know it. You're going to be coming and talking. You're going
That's
to be,
leadership.
that's it. You're going to be part of this, whether you like it or not.
Well, I'm going to love it. Thank you, Jim, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right. Good to see you guys.
And also check out the Meadowlands Chamber, and also the Meadowlands magazine is awesome. And we're in that as well. We contribute a column to it. That's Jim Kirkus from the Meadowlands Chamber of Commerce, one of our trusted trustees. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back. This is Lessons in Leadership. Mary, it's time for another Lessons in Leadership seminar on the topic of, graphic will come up, trust in leadership. Why are we doing this?
It is so important, trust. First, I think we should define really what we're talking about here. When we're talking about trust, it's trusting one another, it's trusting yourself, it's trusting your key stakeholders, whether it's a client, a customer. So trust is so important, especially when we're talking about leadership.
So first item, you ready? Graphic comes up, first bullet point, go first. Put up the graphic, go first. Go first in what? Mary, you and I are having a conversation the other, literally this morning, and we're dealing with a very complex situation involving media, let's just say. And we're having a whole bunch of folks in our universe, externally and internally, saying, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Where are we? Where are we going? And I said, Mary, we need to go first. We need to proactively communicate to our team. We need to proactively go first and communicate with our underwriters and sponsors. We need to go first. Well, no, I'm waiting to see how things. My wife, I love my wife, Jennifer. She's great. But her book should be called, hopefully she won't see this. The book should be called, Let's See How Things Work Out. Jen, I love that strategy sometimes, but sometimes you have to go first. I say, Mary, I'm going to trust Mary if she goes, if she shows me. Yeah, okay. Go first. Take the risk. Mary, you say what to that? I went on my soapbox, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I want to make sure we get to other tips and tools as well about trust. But yes, going first is essential. You want to let the people in your orbit know what is
Yes.
going on before they hear it from others, or worse, before that rumor mill starts to spiral.
Go first. Second, how about this one? Open and candid communication. And I'm going to tweak this. It says open and candid communication, transparency. Be transparent. Yeah, I love that. Here's what I say. Be strategically transparent. Mary, what's the difference between being total? We have a totally we tell everyone everything,
If
do
you
we?
tell everything, you're going to scare the, craziness out of them. So you want to make sure that you're being transparent strategically, intentionally. You want to make sure that you're sharing the key details that are need to know, because if you just start sharing everything that's either premature or speculative, you can create a sense of panic when there doesn't need to be one. And also, frankly, if you're not sure, don't share that information until you are sure, so you don't have to then take it back later.
So that bullet point should say be strategically transparent.
I like that.
Okay, how about third one? Ready for this? Create a safe environment. Here's what that means. Trust is also based on the fact that people need to trust that if they say something, ask something, challenge you, and I don't always get this right because there have been times our team members have questioned or challenged me or someone on the outside, and I get peeved and defensive. And it's hard then to trust because how can I be honest if you're going to push back like that? We need to fight the urge to push back and create a safe environment for people to share their thoughts. Right, Mary?
Agreed. So often I'll share something with you, Steve, and we've been there, and you may take it a certain way because you take it as whether it's personal or you feel it that way. And I'll say, Steve, this is a safe space. If we can't talk honestly and openly with each other, where can we? And that usually just takes it down a notch because you do have to be open, just as open as you are to give that feedback, you need to be open to receiving that feedback as well.
And Mary also is open enough to say to me, hey, listen, I want to remind you, if this goes sideways, I don't need to hear you say that I said such and such. Don't
Oh,
you
yeah.
see that?
Don't bring it up later.
Yeah, you see, you
Oftentimes, they'll be like, well, you said, in the heat of a moment, you always just let those things float away, dissolve, and then move on to something more constructive.
usually. Okay, last bullet point. You ready for this? Follow through on your commitments, meaning, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. I promise we're going to financially, you're going to get it. And then here's what happens. There's a promotion. You're in line for it. And then we decide, or someone decides, that's not going to happen. We don't communicate with you. It's not going to happen. We don't say anything. And how are you supposed to trust me moving forward? In that case, Mary, you got to be totally transparent, even if you can't do what you
If
said.
you can't do what you said you were going to do, just be upfront and just don't ghost those people by not communicating at all. That's the worst thing to do.
So I know it says goodbye, Elvin. I got it. Do what you said you were going to do, but if you can't, own
Say
it
that.
and be
Own it.
transparent. For Mary, Steve, we trust each other. We trust Elvin and Frank and our entire team, and I trust that we're out of time. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good. which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.